Just before you start listening to this podcast, a reminder that we have a special subscription offer. You can get 12 issues of The Spectator for £12, as well as a £20 Amazon voucher. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher if you'd like to get this offer.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, The Spectator's daily and these days more than daily politics podcast. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by Fraser Nelson and James Forsyth. So we've had a big Labour policy announcement overnight, and that is news that the party, if in government, and presumably on this majority government, would plan to nationalise broadband and make it free at the point of use, so free for all, to access it. Now, James, this has received some criticism already, but before we get to that, can you just explain how exactly Labour are explaining this will work and the costings?
So Labour are saying that every household in that they are saying now that the internet fast broadband access should be regarded as a utility that everyone is entitled to. They want to connect every country, every house in the whole in the country to full fibre fast broadband, and they want to give it to them for in inverted commas for free, obviously paid for out of taxation. They say they would. Pay for this, they would take over BT, Openreach, the BT thing that takes broadband out around the country, and they would swap government bonds for shares, which is how they say they would keep the cost down, and then they would pay for the running of this service by a tax on, and this is raises questions about how practical it is, on the global profits of tech giants, so your Amazons, your Facebooks, your Googles. That is the plan. I think there is... This does induce a certain amount of 2017 nervousness in me in this respect, which is in 2017, I think what Labour did very effectively was they picked areas where things where people were annoyed, so train, energy, all that stuff. And I would say the problem with rail in this country, the problem with the utilities in this country, is that there isn't enough competition. There isn't enough market. But Labour said the answer to your frustration is more state. And I worry that the same thing might be happening here, which is I think the problem with Openreach is that there isn't enough competition to it. And that's why it isn't moving as fast as it should do. And so this Labour pitch will have an appeal because people are like, well, Openreach doesn't work. Well, the problem, reason Openreach isn't working is that there isn't enough competition for Openreach. But that's my worries.
Fraser, so we're looking at around £20 billion for the rollout. If the Labour were to buy Openreach, then or part of it at least, there are various valuations, but some say it'd be between £12 billion and £23 billion. But another point has been raised, which is what would then happen to alternative high-quality broadband providers? Do they have to be nationalised too, or do they just ultimately go out of business in some way or suffer? Because if... For example, I was able to get free high fibre broadband from Openreach. I wouldn't have much need for Virgin.
That's right. But under the system, I very much doubt you. If you, well, for a start, imagine you live in London, so you've got it already. But say you live in Somerset and you don't. And you're listening to Mr. Corbyn coming along and he'll give you free broadband. And you'll be pleased with that. But you, in your country home in Somerset, Katie, would probably have to wait until the year 2035 or something to get that government broadband. I mean, people now just have no memory of the old days where you had to call up the old post office telecoms BT and ask for a new phone line or something, or a new phone, and you'd be told you had to wait massively. When the government provides something, it's always late, it's always rationed. When it's free, that means you've got to wait. I'll give you an example. Right now, the government is ordering electricity companies and gas companies to give away free meters. So if you want a digital meter in your house, you can't actually buy one. You get it for free. Except because you get it for free, you get put in a massive waiting list, and you have to wait. In my case, I've had to wait 3 years for this thing. So the reason, that's the problem. It sounds great. The government will give it to you. It sounded great that the government will give you free electricity meters. But if you think that broadband companies are bad at delivering broadband, wait until you see the government try to do it. So there will, to answer your question, there will be other companies that will be allowed to. And I actually think they do be doing pretty good business, because people who are fed up waiting until, well, Jeremy Corbyn says 2030. Let's face it, if it's any big government project from HS2 otherwise will cost a lot more and be a lot later. So we're looking at 15 years. And if you don't want to wait those 15 years, you'll probably have to pay somebody to bring it to your house.
But James, one of the problems here is ultimately, as you touched on, a lot of people don't feel as though they do have access to high quality broadband right now. During Boris Johnson's leadership campaign, he made a pledge for high quality fibre broadband for all by 2025. At the time, quite a lot of heavy scepticism was put on that by the various internet companies. So it's not as though it's suddenly a new thing that a government pledge might not exactly be on time.
Yeah, and I think this is a problem, which is, again, this is not bad politics from Labour, in that they've worked out that this is something that people want and that people are frustrated. It adds to the sense of, you know, some people get this very fast internet, other people don't. And if you aren't one of the people getting the fast internet, you feel you are being left behind. And there is the John McDonnell argument that we are being left behind some of our international competitors on this measure. It is true. That is the problem. The question is, as Fraser said, is whether the state is the most efficient organisation to take charge of rolling out your full fibre fast broadband. And I very much doubt that it is. But I think the biggest problem for Labour, though, in terms of selling this policy, is going to be whether people think they can actually deliver it. I don't think that people are going to have an, you know, however much I might have an ideological objection to the idea that the state should do this or that it should be free, I don't think most people will, but I think people will question whether Corbyn and McDonnell are competent enough to make this work.
Fraser, do you think it will be a popular policy and one that could motivate people to vote for Labour in the election? Because if we look at 2017, the Labour manifesto, which we don't have yet, is being fresh out on Saturday, but clearly this is going to be a part of it. Mm. The Labour manifesto was actually very popular with the public.
Yes, I do think it's popular. The funny thing about what Boris Johnson derides as the Bolivarian socialism of Jeremy Corbyn is that a lot of people, including Tory voters, do quite like it. So, like, take some of his ideas: renationalise rail, 56% of the public support that. Nationalise water, 50% of the public support that. Workers on boards, 55%. Even Theresa May backed that at one stage. So I don't see why offering free stuff at the expense of the internet giants would go down badly. If you'd announced this in the early 90s, lots of people would have had fresh memories of what it was like living under the pre-British telecom nationalised industries. They'll remember what it's like not having to be in a massive waiting list. They've worked out the government is not very good at providing technological services. But ultimately, this is why the Soviet Union failed, because these things are out with the competence of government. But when you have got a new generation with no real memory of that, to whom it seems ancient history to talk about the days of national, of governments producing, for example, cars and what have you, then I don't see why the abstract notion wouldn't be popular. And this is why the Tories are in a bit of a bind here. They can say, oh yes, this doesn't work. They can talk about the 1960s, but that doesn't really matter. We have seen, certainly in Latin America, such promises being made, such promises being very popular, then disaster being unveiled when governments are elected to introduce them and it all goes wrong. I would rather not live through that sort of learning curve process. But I think the Tories would be ill-advised to dismiss this as obvious nonsense. It will, like so much of Corbynomics, strike most people as common sense.
James, it's also the type of policy which ultimately dominates the news agenda, just like it is dominating the bulk of today's podcast. And that means that the conversation moves away from the things the Tories want to talk about, like Brexit, and moves onto Labour's turf. But there is another factor here, which is ultimately, Labour, if you look at their vast project, they're being very ambitious with this manifesto. We're getting the sense it is going to be more radical than the one that came before. They're throwing the kitchen sink at Corbynism. But yet we haven't heard that much about their taxation plans. We often hear about taxing billionaires, taxing multinational companies, taxing tech firms. The type of changing of the economic model would require a different taxation programme. Do you think we're going to get much from Labour on what they would actually tax, I suppose, people who earn amounts of money that most people would know?
I mean, they're going to stick to their thing that 95% of people won't pay any more tax. So only people earning over £80,000 will pay more. I mean, the question is whether the public think that is credible. I mean, there's also another interesting development, which is the lack of market reaction today to this proposal suggests that the market really don't think this is going to happen.
Yeah, really significant, actually.
When I, just before I walked over here for this podcast, I checked, and the BT share price was down by 0.5% this morning. Which, again, if investors in the city thought that this was about to happen, the BT share price would be down by a lot more, because the price of this nationalisation, like all of Labour's nationalisations, the price will be set by Parliament. And I think it is fair to say that a majority Labour Parliament introducing these policies would not decide to kind of opt for the more generous end of the valuation spectrum. So I think this is one of the interesting questions, which is, you know, weirdly, is because of this, John McDonnell may have said, look, you know, it's obviously there's no freaking out in the city about these policies because people aren't thinking they're going to happen. I mean, that is the question. I think the interesting question on the argument about cost is, you know, the Tories went for that $1.2 trillion dossier. And Labour said, oh, it's not true. But it is undeniable that Labour are planning to spend a serious amount of money. And as you say in your question, the question is whether the public thinks someone's going to end up having to pick up the bill for this. And there just aren't enough billionaires in Britain to pay for all this.
Fraser, yesterday we had Professor John Curtis give a briefing to the lobby. And in it, he talked about the various routes to power for the different parties, and he said there was ultimately a sub-zero chance of Labour winning a majority in this election.
Oh my God, did you say that? Well, you know what that means. Anytime you hear somebody say there is a chance of anything less than 1%, that's when to get worried. It wasn't so long ago people were saying with less than 1% of Boris getting a deal. It happened. There was less than 1% chance, according to Yale University, of Donald Trump being elected. It happened. There was a 0.2% chance of Cameron getting majority in the 2015 election, according to Andrew Cooper and Populous in the FT. It happened. So put it this way, I tend to only get seriously worried about things when people put the odds of something at less than 1%. Now, Betfair had them at 3%. Who knows, Katie? Who knows? I'll have to say that after the last 3 or 4 years, I think that any of us should be guarded against thinking that we can look into the souls of voters and tell how elections are going to go. Yes, it looks very unlikely that Labour would get an election. But, you know, I have just stopped myself from trying to think that anything is likely or unlikely. Now, right now, unusually, James and I are slightly at a disagreement here. James is more optimistic about the Conservative chances in this election than I am. I hope James is going to be proved right. But every single time I found myself getting confident about a result in any election, I've usually had occasion to be very grateful that I had actually commissioned the backup cover of the magazine that we ended up using.
And we have commissioned several covers already for that Christmas issue.
We have got a Christmas issue. We've got a Corbyn Wins Christmas cover. It's actually a very nice image. I hope I never have to use it. I hope it will go down to our downstairs gallery of covers that we never had to use. But suffice to say, we've committed significant illustrative resources to a Corbyn victory.
I'll just clarify exactly what John Curtis said. He said, the chances of the Labour Party winning a majority are frankly as close to zero as one can safely say it to be, given they look utterly incapable of regaining anything in Scotland.
Okay, I'm now officially worried.
But that, I think, though, is a crucial point, because what will suit the Tories is for this election to be set up as a contrast between a Tory, do you want a Tory majority or a hung parliament, where the Scottish National Party will hold the balance of power. They are convinced that English voters are no keener on this prospect than they were in 2015.
Thank you, James. Thank you, Fraser.